We know that things that are happening today are leading to the kingdom. Now, on the chart here, you see that the Messianic Age, the last vertical line that takes you there is a dotted line. That dotted line is going to introduce the kingdom that we have been waiting for. Well, I haven't for 2,000 years, but the church has been for 2,000 years. And we are living at a time when that is coming very close. Now, the harvest has lasted longer than I know any brethren ever anticipated from the beginning. I remember Brother Russell even said, well, suppose something unexpected happens and we go on for 100 years. We're beyond 100 years from that statement. But when we watch the things that are happening, we do observe a sequence of progress of events that are taking us in the right direction. Now, what's happening today in the news and online, where you can see and even videos, is experiences with Israel. Israel doesn't even know that those experiences are leading us to the kingdom of their Messiah. They will be moved with regret that they didn't know that, and moved with appreciation that God is so generous as to use them to be the threshold of the kingdom on earth that is approaching. We all know that. I wish all Christians did. I also wish all Christians knew that after the present heavenly hope of the gospel age, that then God would turn his attention to every single person remaining ever in the race of Adam and provide for their blessing. Well, when we see things happening in Israel, that's what we know is finally going to lead to. Now, we're going to start with our discussion of experiences that are happening today about Israel and a little bit in the past with Ezekiel 38. And I think all of you know exactly what that is all about. That's about Israel leading to the experiences in the kingdom leading to Israel. And it will be the last attack upon Israel that will finally bring to their attention who their Messiah is. We'll read a variety of scriptures about that. We've asked Sister Jean to read scriptures for us today, if she would. And in Ezekiel 38, we're going to start off with just the first three verses, Ezekiel 38, 1, 2, and 3. Sister Jean.
And the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, set thy face against Gog, the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and prophesy against him, and say, Thus saith the Lord God, Behold, I am against thee, O Gog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal.
Okay, so that's the enemy that's going to attack Israel primarily. And that enemy, usually, Gog and Magog, the brethren say, is Russia. Well, I'm consistent with that. I have very traditional views on these points. But we'd like to discuss why we think that might be Israel. Now, Sister Jean read King James. Is that right? Okay. She knows that's what I use, and so I appreciate that she uses something similar. But if you read this in other translations, you will find it a little bit different. Verse 2 will say, Gog, the land of Magog, not the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, but the prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal. Now, I've heard brethren suggest that maybe that means Russia, Moscow, and Tobolsk. Now, I'm not a reader of Hebrew, and some people may say, wow, you look deeper, that's not what I mean. But I look on the Internet, and I see all kinds of translations. There's a place called Bible Hub. I found at least a dozen translations that use that way, Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal. So I'm partial to that view. I'm also open to any correction if you have, you know, thoughtful opinions on it. Either way, I still think this is Russia. Now, if we go later in chapter 38, you're going to see in verse 15, and thou shalt come from thy place out of the north parts. North parts. Oh, okay. So is Russia north of Israel? Well, you can probably see that this is Israel here, this little brown area. I can't see on the entire map a smaller place than Israel, the center of God's kingdom. So why is it that everybody's trying to take land away from Israel when they have so little, less than everybody else? Well, I think it's they're motivated by the adversary. They don't know that. But anyway, if when we go up farther north from Israel, you're going to see Russia, and Moscow would be just about due north. So I think that that's Russia. So today we don't see Russia violently attacking Israel, but we do see that they are sympathetic towards a country that does, and that's Persia. We're going to go down now and read verse 5, not 5 and 6, just 5 to begin with, Sister Jean.
Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya with them, all of them with shield and helmet.
Persia. Who in the world is Persia today? Well, I think you all know, it's Iran. Now, 100 years ago, I wouldn't have to ask you because it was called Persia. 100 years ago, they changed their name to Iran. 100 years ago, I think it was 1935, 1930-something. So that's Iran today. Iran is the inveterate foe of Israel today. That wasn't always the case. Not in 1948, not in 1967, not in 1973 when Arab nations invaded Israel. Not even one of those times did Iran join with them or even express sympathy with them. But things changed in 1979, I believe it was. I remember when that change came. I was in Africa at the time. I was in Nigeria. I think it was with Brother Richard Evans. We were finished pretty much with most of our service there. We were at a home of a brother in Lagos, Nigeria. I get my names right. Pretty sure that's right. And we were listening to the radio, and we heard that there was an uprising in Iran. And we heard that Americans were held hostage. It was like over a year they were hostage of Iran. And the whole country changed. The Shah was vacated, and the Ayatollah came in and took control. So that was a radical shift, and I had no idea just what might happen. I probably knew at the time, I'm just guessing, that this scripture referred to Iran. So maybe I said, oh, that makes sense. But it was a change that nobody was expecting on that year in particular. Ethiopia, who is Ethiopia? Ethiopia is Cush. So it's not the country of Ethiopia. Now you see on looking at your right side, that map has Ethiopia in Africa, but it's not really by the coast. Ethiopia has no reason to attack Israel. There are Jews that went from Ethiopia to Israel during the experience after Israel was defined to be a nation, and I don't think there's any reason for them to attack. So I don't think that translation is right. Cush is the way it should be. Now, you read Ethiopia because King James, but most other versions are going to have Cush. So who are the Cushites? Well, they're broad spread. I mean, Cush was the son of Ham, and so the Cushites are many of Africans. Well, how then do we not choose Ethiopia? But if you look from Ethiopia to the right side, just over that very small body of water, you're going to see Yemen. Yemen's in the news today a lot. They are really attacking Israel. They're a friend of Iran. They hate Israel. They would like to obliterate them. But not all of Yemen. It's only part of Yemen. It's the one that's closest to Ethiopia. And that Yemen are the Houthi rebels. And Houthi rebels have invaded Yemen, have tried to take over the government. They're pretty successful. But it's not all of Yemen. It's just that part. So who's on the other side of Yemen? That part is supported by Saudi Arabia. So there's been a war in Yemen for a long time. I don't know what's happening right now. I don't hear the news about that right now. But there has been between Houthi and the other governors of Yemen. The Houthi rebels, I believe, are the ones involved here. Now, if you asked me that 30 years ago, I'd say, I don't know. But today, it just seems like we're witnessing things that are progressing. And I think that is Cush. Who's the next one? That would be Libya. Who do you suppose Libya might be? I would guess Libya. So Libya is over here on the top of Africa, and then the other side of Egypt. Now, what's happening with Libya that means that they're going to be against Israel? And my answer is, I don't know. We got some years to go. I'll be watching with interest. But you know what happened in Libya a few years ago? America intervened, and it wasn't a good thing. Libya right now is in shambles. That's my opinion. I'd probably have a variety of governments that are imposing each other. But somehow they're going to transform into an enemy of Israel. And I presume they don't like Israel already. But they're not positioned right now to send military force there against Israel. So we'll watch and we'll see. And I'll listen to anybody that has a better opinion. Now verse 6, Sister Jean. We have two more enemies of Israel.
Gomer and all his bands, the house of Togarmah of the north quarters, and all his bands, and many people with thee.
So we've got two here. I'm going to take them out of sequence. I'm going to take Togarma first because I find that one a little bit easier than Gomer. Togarma, I usually hear, is Turkey. Now, you'll see that it says in verse 6, and all his bands of the house of Togarma of the north quarters. Now, we mentioned the north quarters, the north earlier for Russia, but Togarma also is north of Israel. So would that be Turkey? Well, I think so. Who's governing Turkey? Well, a more oppressive government, but I don't mean they're oppressive to their own people, but somebody has taken control more than the leader of that country has taken control in the past. And he's turning more and more and more anti-Israel. Now, Turkey has never attacked Israel yet, but apparently they're going to. That's my opinion. Now, I've heard one other interpretation of this by a very bright brother and a good student, so keep that in the back of our mind. But this is what I think is going to happen. I think Turkey is going to be allied more and more with the enemies of Israel. And then Gomer. Who is Gomer? There's nothing on the map that says Gomer. But if you look at Germany, Germany has similar letters to the word Gomer. You say, well, that's not a very good argument. Well, this isn't my argument. This is something I get from people that are brighter and sharper on it than I am. But I don't know if Jim's listening now, but I'll just say his name. Jim Parkinson tells me that probably is Germany. Now, why would Germany be involved? You don't see another Western nation that has listed in this area unless you consider Russia Western a little bit, maybe in some respects. But there's a reason for it. There's a reason to expect some Western government to be involved. Now, I'll read this text in Revelation because we're going to just go there very quick. But Revelation 16, verse 13, what we talked about. We talked about the plagues. And this is plague number 6. Brother Bill Ducker knows about this. He's taught us about it. So in plague number 6, verse 13, Revelation 16, 13, I saw three unclean spirits like frogs come out of the mouth of the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet. The dragon is Western powers that Satan controls. The beast is papacy. It's a Western power. False prophet, there are different opinions. But the point is, we have a Western influence involved in this sixth plague. Why does that make a difference? Let's go down now to verse 16. Revelation 16, 16. He gathered them into these three spirits. Oh, I should read verse 14. They are the spirits of devils working miracles which go forth unto the kings of the earth and of the whole world to gather them to the battle of the great day of God Almighty. So these three entities that have Western connections are involved in bringing the kings of the earth to the battle of the great day. What is that battle? Verse 16. He gathered them together into a place called, in the Hebrew tongue, Armageddon. Now, I think Brother Ducca even mentioned the point of Hebrew is it reminds you of Israel. I got that point from Brother David Duran's talk. Never occurred to me before. The fact that he said that word Hebrew doesn't appear very often in Revelation. And perhaps it's just a little token to remind us that Israel is going to be the center of that last battle and of Armageddon. So I think that this needs to have some Western influence involved in the aggregation of governments against Israel. So I think that that's legitimate. I think Gomer is probably Germany, but Germany is really the head of Western Europe. Now, I did notice, let's flip over in Ezekiel 38 to another group of nations that are not united with this. They're not united to it. It doesn't mean they're going to go in and defend Israel militarily. I think America is part of this group. America has never sent soldiers to defend Israel. But they have sent a lot of goods over there to help them in their battle. And in addition, they have actually sent hundreds of people over there to keep the peace. That was some years ago, 30, 40 years ago. And that didn't turn out well. I think America lost like 200 soldiers. And so President Reagan said, bring them home. And so they pulled out. But these are nations in verse 13 that are not complicit with the invasion, even though they don't defend Israel. Okay, Sister Jean, verse 13.
Sheba and Dedan and the merchants of Tarshish with all the young lions thereof, shall say unto thee, Art thou come to take a spoil? Hast thou gathered thy company to take a prey, to carry away silver and gold, to take away cattle and goods, to take a great spoil?
Okay, so these are people that are asking a rhetorical question that are not in favor of the invasion they're seeing develop. Sheba and Dedan, I'll just affirm that is Saudi Arabia. How do I know that? Jim Parkinson tells me. But I looked on the internet and I find that many people agree with that. I don't want to spend a lot of time here because we've got so much else to cover, but I'm going to suggest that that is indeed Saudi Arabia. Today, Saudi Arabia and Iran are not close to, actually, literally they are, but not politically close to each other. Why would they not be? Because they're on two different sides of Islam. Iran is Shiite and Saudi Arabia is Sunni. And it's like water and oil. They don't always mix. Especially if they're close to each other and maybe they have some things that are causing some conflict between them. Like they both have oil, for example. And one wants to be in charge of the other. So it is true that Turkey is also not Shiite. And yet they're going to be companions with Iran. But Saudi Arabia is not. I think Sheba and Dedan is them. And it says all the young lions, the merchants of Tarshish. Now, almost everybody that investigates this says they are a Western power that would be seaworthy. Who would that be? I've heard two possibilities, that maybe it's Spain or maybe it's England. Notice the next expression, and all the young lions. Who's the old lion? The old British lion. So I think that this is England. But there's more reasons than that, that I don't think this is Spain. And that is Spain is not particularly pleasant with Israel. They're a Western power, the Western nation, but they're not pro-Israel. And, well, is England? Well, it's some question, but I think more so than Spain. Okay, we'll see. But the old lion, I think, is a British lion. And all the young lions say, we're not in favor of this attack against Israel either. Who are the young lions? I think that would be America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. All of us have roots in the British Empire. And so I kind of think that's the point. Well, we'll see as time continues. And we're going to go now to another prophecy that the brethren talk about a lot with respect to Israel, and that's in Psalms 83. And in Psalms 83, we're going to see not this last battle against Israel, but what we have already witnessed in preceding times by a totally different group of nations. Now, you notice in Ezekiel 38, not even one of those is an Arab nation. By Arab, I mean descended from Abraham, from Ishmael, or Esau, you know, strictly Arab nations. Not one of them. But now we're going to see in Psalms 83, they are indeed Arab nations. Where our suggestion here, our understanding is that these are not complicit in the final attack on Israel. This is describing things we have actually witnessed already. Now, way back in Brother Russell's day, not a single one of these had happened. We're living so far beyond the early harvest. We look retrospectively and see how the scriptures have been fulfilled already in the past. So let's look at Psalms 83. Sister Jean, we'll have you read for us again. And we're going to look at verses 1 through 4. And what we're going to read in 1 through 4 is their desire and their ambition and their wish. This is what these nations want to do with respect to Israel. Okay, verses 1 through 4.
Keep not thou silence, O God. Hold not thy peace, and be not still, O God. For lo, thine enemies make a tumult, and they that hate thee have lifted up the head. They have taken crafty counsel against thy people, and consulted against thy hidden ones. They have said, Come, and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance.
It doesn't say we want to take a few of the land of Israel and take it away from them. They don't want Israel to exist, period. And they want to just destroy the nation. Is that what happened when Israel became a nation in 1948? Yep, it did. Now, I don't remember that. I wasn't here. I was here a year later, but I wasn't here at the time. But we all know that 1948 is the time when Israel was pronounced by the United Nations to be a nation, and immediately thereafter, the Arab nations surrounding them attacked them. Now, the Arab nations surrounding them are identified in verses, 6, 7, and 8. We're not going to spend a lot of time on that. We'll read them. But these are all surrounding nations except for one. And it's going to add kind of, and also this country, which is a little different. Sister Jean, would you read verses 6, 7, and 8?
The tabernacles of Edom and the Ishmaelites, of Moab and the Hagarenes, Gebel and Ammon and Amalek, the Philistines with the inhabitants of Tyre. Asher also is joined with them. They have holpen the children of Lot, Selah.
Okay, now if you see that list of names that Sister Jean read, and you go to the internet and you find out where these places, they'll all be surrounding Israel. I'm not going to go into great detail because I even have some uncertainties precisely on each one. But they are all surrounding nations. And those are the kind of nations that attacked Israel in 1948, in 1967, in 1973. Now, as I said, I don't remember 1948. I do remember 1967. I was surprised when that happened. I was a teenager, older teenager. And I thought, whoa, okay. Is this the end? I heard some brethren wonder, is this the end? No. It wasn't. Even then, I didn't think it could be. I needed more time. I was too young. So I thought, this is just, but it was a surprise. As I often tell brethren, I'm not a good predictor. I can't tell you ahead of time exactly what's going to happen. But when it happens, well, then we try to piece it together with the scriptures. So I think that this is one of those invasions that the Arabs had. Now, you see that it says, and Asher is joined with them. Who is Asher? Asher is Assyria, and today you see that green country in the upper right-hand corner, that's Iraq, that's Assyria. And so Iraq was associated with them. They weren't a neighbor, and Iraq was not they're not descendants of Abraham. They're not Arabs. Okay, the definition of an Arab is very flexible. You know, you see even Egypt over here. Today, you know what they're called? United Arab Republic, something like that. I always wonder why they're not Arabs. Egypt comes from a different product altogether. They're not Shemites, they're Hamites. But I don't know. Maybe Arabs entered there, I don't know. But it's all Arab nations, plus Asher, and that's Assyria, that is not Arab, not genetically Arab, at least. But they were joined with them, and they did. And Iraq was an enemy of them, and you know what happened to the leader of Iraq? America got rid of him, basically. And so they're not going to be involved after that, now that they're changed. Okay, now I want to see how many times God defends them from their Arab neighbors that attack them. So let's read that in verses 9, 10, and 11. Sister Jean, 9, 10, 11. And count the number of times. It may be confusing how many times God defends Israel here. But let's see, 9, 10, and 11.
Do unto them as unto the Midianites, as to Sisera, as to Jabin at the brook of Kishon, which perished at Endor. They became as dung for the earth. Make their nobles like Oreb and like Zeb, yea, all their princes as Zeba and as Zalmunna.
Okay, now you see that on the board we have verses 9 through 11 listed for these three examples of how God has delivered Israel historically in the past before Psalms 83 was composed. There's only three cases. Now, when you read these, you might be a little confused because there's different numbers of names. But Midian, you'll find that in Numbers, the 31st chapter. Sisera and Jabin, you heard that talked about in this convention. And that's, I don't have it there, but let's see. That's back in the book of Judges. And then Oreb and Zeb and Zeba and Zalmunna were four leaders of one invasion of Israel, and that was in the time of Gideon. So what you have, three examples of how God is going to save them from the wish of the Arab neighbors to destroy the land of Israel. Has that happened? 1948, 1967, 1973. I think that's it. We haven't had another national invasion by an Arab country for 50 years. I keep waiting for another one, but not anymore. I don't think it's going to happen, because in Ezekiel 38, there is no Arab nation that's complicit here. What is happening in this, in the meantime? Well, a lot of good things. Let's see. We've had in 1978 the Camp David Accords, and we've had in 1979 Egypt signing up with that. It took a long time for Jordan to join that. Wow, 1979 to 1994, decade and a half or so, and yet they finally did. Jordan is now officially at peace with Israel. Doesn't mean they love them, doesn't mean they like them, but it means they're officially at peace. And in the recent attack by Iran with missiles going over Jordan, Jordan either allowed or participated and cooperated with Israel's defense over the skies of Jordan. Jordan was not an enemy of Israel as a nation today. United Arab Emirates, 2020, that was the Abraham Accords. Was that something I expected? No. That was another experience that I didn't know about, but that the Abraham Accords in 2020 took effect, and I thought, okay, this looks like this is finishing off more peace with other former enemies of Israel. So today you've got people that have joined this, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia in spirit, they haven't signed officially, but in spirit, Morocco, Sudan, I forgot that one, and Malawi. Okay, there's the 1978 agreement. It was made with Anwar Sadat, Jimmy Carter, and Menachem Begin. All three of those are gone now. We've gone so many years beyond that, they just naturally, well, no, Anwar Sadat wasn't a natural death. He was eliminated because of his peace with Israel. Enemies inside Egypt assassinated him. You probably remember something about that. Okay, so those are the Abraham Accords in 2020 that surprised me. I thought, okay, I got to go back and see how this makes sense with the scriptures. It does now. And there's Morocco. And said Jordan and Malawi. Okay, those are not all Arab enemies of Israel, but they're people that have joined the Abraham Accords for one reason or another. Okay, so there's Psalms 83 again. And so you see now, in 1948, we're at the bottom, 1967 and 1973, and one more. Now, I avoided putting a date on the last one. You all know I have an opinion. I don't want to put, that's not my point here. My point is that there will be one more invasion. That's from Ezekiel 38. So we've got four national invasions of Israel. One more to go. And there was a long hiatus between 73 and 38. Now that 1973 war I remember as well. Probably many of you would as well. 1973, Israel almost lost. As a matter of fact, Moshe Dayan, the man with the patch on his eye, went to Golda Meir, the only feminine leader of Israel ever. I will call her Deborah, because she reminds me of the judge, the only woman judge of Israel, way back in the Old Testament. I often thought about that. I thought, well, Golda Meir has a good example, pre-example. And she's kind of like Deborah. She was a good woman. And she said to Moshe Dayan, that can't happen. We can't give up. We can't surrender. That would be like saying goodbye to our country. So they tried to persist. And I have seen videos on the internet with soldiers reporting their experience, how remarkable it was, what they witnessed, and how God preserved them. You can look on the internet to see. It was remarkable. 1967, that was different. 1967, Israel knew the attack was coming, and they preempted it, and they went out, and they had a, what was that, six-day war? 60, you know, the little joke, they had to rest for the Sabbath. I don't know. But the six-day war, I've never heard of a war of 6 days. But that happened. So those are the three wars, and we got one more war coming. And I think that's pending in a few years from now. Okay. Zechariah, the 12th chapter. Let's see what Zechariah 12 says about these conflicts with Israel that are going to take us to the time when Israel is going to mourn and weep, not because of fear, but because of appreciation and recognition for what they have missed for 2,000 years. Okay, Zechariah, the 12th chapter. Now this, I'm going to tell you where I got this from. It was from Brother Ken Rossin. It was years ago. And I was quite engaged with it, but that's where I got the idea. And we're going to read Zechariah 12, starting with verse 6, and see what happens to Jerusalem in verse 6. Sister Jean, that would be Zechariah 12, 6.
In that day will I make the governors of Judah like an hearth of fire among the wood, and like a torch of fire in a sheaf, and they shall devour all the people round about, on the right hand and on the left, and Jerusalem shall be inhabited again in her own place, even in Jerusalem.
Okay, now that didn't happen in 1948. 1948, they didn't get Jerusalem. Jordan got the city, and they kept it for many years. Now, I've been to Israel, well, three times. Well, first time I was there, I was all by myself, you know, as far as people I knew. I wandered around, didn't know what I was looking at, but I wandered through Jerusalem and saw signs that Israel had posted talking about this is what Jordan did when Jordan had control of Israel, of Jerusalem rather, and they had really just crumbled down homes and cities, areas. So they left that destroyed so that they could put a sign over and say, see, this is what they did when they were here. But in 1967, Israel got it, and they have not lost it since. In 1980, they finally passed a law that said, we now retain old Jerusalem, period. This is our country, and that's the end of it. I even think there's a meaning to that name, to that number, rather. But that's another subject, some other time. But in 1967, that is verse 6. That's what I learned from Brother Ken Rossin. I believe he's right. But in verse number 7, you might think that's going to be what happens next, but it isn't. It's going to be what happened before 1967. Sister Jean, 7.
The Lord also shall save the tents of Judah first, that the glory of the house of David and the glory of the inhabitants of Jerusalem do not magnify themselves against Judah.
So first, before he saves Jerusalem, he's going to save the tents of Judah first. Now, you don't go into a major city and live in a tent. You live in your home. But if you're outside the city where there are no houses, then you stay in a tent. Did Israel get the outside of Old Jerusalem in 1948? They did. They didn't get the inside of Old Jerusalem until 1967. So before he's going to give them the old city again, completely, first he's going to give them the outskirts. And that's perhaps to suggest to Israel, according to what this says, don't be too proud of what's being done. I'm doing this, not you. And so I'm going to save the tents of Judah first so that the inhabitants of Jerusalem do not magnify themselves. I would say have a little pride. Verse number 8, we're going to look at 1973. Go ahead.
In that day shall the Lord defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And he that is feeble among them at that day shall be as David, and the house of David shall be as God, as the angel of the Lord before them.
So he's going to defend Jerusalem that has already been acquired in 1967. That was in 1973. That's when we talked about where Moshe Dayan told Golda Meir, I think we're going to have to surrender. And she says, no, just that's impossible. We can't. And if God hadn't stepped in to deliver them, they wouldn't have surrendered. They would have been obliterated. That's an opinion. Maybe it would have been half the country. I don't know. But it would have been very, very bad. But God stepped in to deliver them. Now, any more problems that God's going to deliver them from? Yes, verse 9. Let's read that.
And it shall come to pass in that day that I will seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem.
So we're going to have a lot of other nations coming again. That's Ezekiel 38. When that happens and God delivers them, then, verse 10, Sister G.
And I will pour upon the house of David and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and of supplications. And they shall look upon me whom they have pierced, and they shall mourn for him as one mourneth for his only son, and shall be in bitterness for him as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn.
That'll be a day of national appreciation for their deliverance, but mourning when they realized who it is that delivered them. Not mourning with sadness, but just regret that they have not embraced him for 2,000 years. How will they possibly know? They didn't know in 1973 that Jesus stepped in for them. How will they know in the Ezekiel 38 conflict that it's Jesus that has rescued them? Somebody's got to tell them. They wouldn't listen to me, but they'll listen to Abraham. So I think this is when the ancient worthies are back. And they explain to Israel what's really going on. Now, there's many other times when we could talk about this, that Acts chapter 28, Paul to the island of Melita, representing the ancient worthies. And he's burning them of the old sticks of the law. And out comes that snake and fastens onto him, and he just shakes it off like nothing. So when they saw the snake attack him, they said, this man is some vile man. He's not honest. He's going to die. But when he shook it off, they said, he must be a god. And I think that's the way they're going to recognize the ancient worthies when Israel is successful. Now, our time's running too short. I'm going to ask for mercy. We'll see. But I got a few more things, but I'll have to say them quickly. So I'll be both quick and ask for mercy. Okay, we'll see. Okay, so what we've got here are exactly four wars. No more, no less. Okay, I shouldn't say war. We've got other wars since then, but I don't think that those are national invasions by other national countries. That's what I mean. Hamas was not a national country. They invaded not with the hope of destroying Israel just a couple of years ago. They had no hope of destroying Israel. They just wanted to do whatever vile thing they could, which they did. Disgusting, but that's another subject. But that's not a national invasion to end their nation. Okay, Joel, and we're going to go quick here. And if we can read Joel 1, verse 4, Joel is going to talk about four times when enemies invade Israel. It's engaging that, now these are locusts and all kinds of weird things, but that's what they are, armies that invade. Sister Jean.
That which the palmer worm hath left, hath the locust eaten. And that which the locust hath left, hath the cankerworm eaten. And that which the cankerworm hath left, hath the caterpillar eaten.
Okay, so there's four items there. Is that right? Okay, four bugs there. Okay, and those represent basically the invasions of these different four. I think those are telling us the same thing. Now, Joel 2:25, we're not going to read so much, but Joel 2:25 is going to say exactly the same thing. There were four invasions. If you look earlier in Joel chapter 2, it's all about the deliverance of Israel from the last invasion. And that deliverance is going to lead to verse number, where is that? That's going to lead to something really wonderful. This is Joel 2, verse 28, Sister Jean.
And it shall come to pass afterward that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, your old men shall dream dreams, your young men shall see visions.
Pour out his spirit upon all flesh. Now, I know that's what Peter quoted in Acts chapter 2 about the Holy Spirit at the day of Pentecost. Yeah, that's good. But I think this is a prophecy that has a double application. After the four invasions of the Assyrian Empire, which are literally what Joel's talking about, later came the Gospel Age and Pentecost. But after the four invasions that are represented by those Assyrian Empire invasions, that is 1948, 1967, 1973, Ezekiel 38, then he's going to pour out his spirit upon all flesh in a much grander way. Okay, let's go on. Ezekiel 37. We won't talk about this too much, just in Ezekiel 37, to prepare Israel for their national existence, we have four different structures to do that. This isn't directly related, but I just noticed that there's four preparations for Israel's statehood, and then four wars that bring them to their understanding that they are now the kingdom of God. That's all, just a parallel. Okay, 1948. There are four ways of pointing to the year 1948. If you're interested in that, look at this another time. No time for that right now. But the very first one is easy. 1878, when Petah Tikva began, to 1948, exactly 70 years. They lost their nation in 70 years to Babylon. Okay, I won't talk more about that. 1948, yeah, oh, same thing. Micah 5, okay, I won't talk about that. That goes way back to Zedekiah and takes you all the way to the kingdom, verse by verse by verse. Zedekiah to Jesus to the diaspora to the God standing for the church during the gospel, Jesus standing for the church in the gospel age, point number 4. Point number 5, the deliverance of Israel. Point number 6, wasting the land of the enemies. And number 7, dew and showers from God that are going to be the blessings of the kingdom of God that will open at that time. Those other scriptures down here, Jehoshaphat in 2 Chronicles 20, Hezekiah in Isaiah 36 through 7-8, are all other ways of describing prophetically the last conflict at Israel. Now, we've got the chairman here. He's been patient with me. So I won't talk about this and how it shows the kingdom beginning when the Israelites crossed the River Jordan after their 40 years in the wilderness experience. But point number 5, Joshua 3:4 says, the way that river was broken up and allowed them to come into the land was there was a landslide at a place called Adam. Adam? You mean the reconciliation for the sins of Adam, perhaps? And that was close to the place called Zaratan. Zaratan? Zaratan means pierced. Well, that's Zechariah the 12th chapter. They'll look unto him whom they pierced. And then they're going to realize, we haven't been circumcised for 40 years. Israel hasn't been circumcised for the gospel age. So they go into circumcision of the heart, like Jeremiah says, and then they're ready for the kingdom purpose. Israel has to be circumcised. They have to be changed as a nation. And then they will do something more wonderful than they could ever imagine on their own. To appreciate Messiah and appreciate the privilege of extending blessings to all the world of mankind.